good morning. As we were saying today, mental health-related absence from the police has dramatically increased by almost 40% between 2012 and 2016. We've uncovered that almost 40,000 days were lost due to mental health sickness. This is compared to just under 29,000 days in 2012. So what on earth is going on? Deputy Chief Constable Drew Harris here with me this morning. Good morning to you, Drew.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is going on?
Well, obviously we're very concerned about this, and we've taken a long, hard look at sickness absence in the organisation. And the one thing I can say is this year, our figures compared to the previous year, our sickness is down 10%. So what is going on, we are trying to mitigate the impact on the organisation. And if I can paint a picture of between 2012 and now, the size of the organisation has changed, has got smaller, but in particular, demands on the police service have changed as well. And we're moving more and more towards dealing with vulnerability, difficult situations involving maybe domestic abuse, child sexual exploitation, child abuse, serious sexual assault. All these crimes are on a slow increase. Other crimes are falling away, and we did see a decrease in overall crime last year, but we are placing more and more very difficult issues in society and working hard with partners around these difficult issues.
So let's walk through some of that. So you say that the force is reduced in terms of manpower. Is that increasing stress and those officers left?
Well, can I just say overall, in respect of stress, we're not the only organisation where stress is increasing. It's more and more recognised in society. And I think an important thing for me to say is if any of our officers and staff are unwell through some form of stress or psychological illness, they should seek help, they should speak to a supervisor, make contact with our occupational health and welfare, or speak to their doctor. And that's an important message. I'm very concerned about the welfare of our officers and work hard around that. And I want anybody in the organisation who's having problems to come forward and seek help. Now, it is very difficult then to say cause and effect between officer numbers and then the knock-on in distress. But because other things in society have changed as well, particularly the demands placed on police officers.
Well, changed in what way?
Well, if you take back 5, maybe 10 years, the type of crime type that we were dealing with has changed. It's more about vulnerability, and that's around harm being caused to individuals and how then our officers have to respond. And it's commonplace for officers to deal with very difficult situations, be it domestic abuse, be it child sexual exploitation, be it vulnerable missing persons. And that is our bread and water every day. That is the task of our local policing teams every day, to deal with people in real dire straits.
And we'll come round that in a second or two, but I guess the layperson might think that, you know, compared to the troubles and when more people were trying to shoot and kill police officers, that it's less stressful these days than before. The threat is not as high.
Well, officers here, unfortunately, do live with the reality of a severe threat directed towards them, and new threats emerge as well. So
it's less of a threat directed towards them, isn't it?
Well, for the individual officers and the way that they deal with that, yes, it may be less than what it was 30 years ago, but still that has an impact on them. And you must bear in mind that the great majority of our officers didn't serve during what's known as the Troubles, have joined as PSNI officers, joined in what was described as a new policing dispensation, a new political dispensation, and yet all of this carries on in terms of threats towards them and threats towards their family.
Tell me about that. So these threats towards them and their family, are many police officers being threatened these days?
Well, in the first 4 months of the year, we had 4 really dangerous attempts on the lives of police officers in
this
Northern
year.
Ireland. Yes, four attempts, four solid, really substantial attempts on the lives of police officers.
And what does that mean? Give us a feel for what that means.
Well, a police officer was shot on the Crumlin Road, yeah, and severely injured. An officer had a bomb placed under his vehicle in Derry. There have been explosive devices directed towards police officers, and there was a significant explosive device in Strabane. And so those incidents, they echo through the organisation without doubt. And there are and obviously the uniform officers here out on the ground are our most junior in service, and a lot of them have just been through their training over the last 3 to 4 years. So that has an impact, obviously. But we put a lot in place around supporting officers, around post-traumatic stress issues, around mental toughness and resilience training. And we've put over 1,000 officers through that training so far this year.
Are many of your officers being threatened in terms of the incidents haven't happened, but you're receiving intelligence, or they're receiving death threats to their home or for their families? Well, is that type of thing happening?
Well, yes, and that's there's a constant drumbeat in the organisation of threats to individual officers. That's correct. Yes.
And how does that manifest itself? How are people threatened?
Well, that'll be in the manner of intelligence is received, and then officers are informed of that, and then we take the appropriate action to support them. And some officers may have to move home, and some may have to move posting, but we always mitigate the nature of the threat.
And give me a sense, Drew, as to, is that on an increase? Does that happen often, officers having to move home, those type of threats to them or their families coming through?
Well, there is a steady drumbeat of that, and we could expect every month one or two officers to be in a position where they're having to move home.
In 20...
Yes, that's correct, yes.
My goodness, I'm shocked by that.
Well, it is shocking.
About two officers per month?
Well...
I know you don't have the figure for you. I'm not expecting you to.
No, over the year... And looking across the last 5 years, we could expect, in around 20 officers per annum to have to move home.
Because of the dissident threat?
Because of threats. Some of them predominantly dissident, but also then from loyalist paramilitaries as well. And loyalist paramilitaries also threaten police officers, and just in terms of officers may take enforcement behaviour they don't like, and then some sort of threat then. Or we become aware of, it's not so much the intelligence is relayed as a threat, but the intelligence could be in around an intent to attack the individual or attack their home.
You mentioned loyalist paramilitaries. Which
yes.
organisations have threatened your officers to the point where they've had to move home?
I'm just going to use, I will use the expression loyalist paramilitaries, because there's specific incidents that I'm thinking of, but I don't know the specific organisation, but there's specific incidents that I'm thinking of.
So it's fair for me to conclude from what you've just said that, and we'll talk about the dissidents in a second,
yeah.
but loyalist paramilitaries have actively and are actively threatening police officers.
Elements of so-called loyalist paramilitaries are very active in crime, and we've seen very serious crime, up including murder in recent times, which is attributed to loyalist paramilitaries. And so, an element of that is obviously they do come in conflict with officers who are enforcing the law or pursuing investigations. That's a consequence of that. And that's a consequence of us doing our job in terms of protecting the society.
If I can cut to the chase, then I will move on from this. Are there any loyalist paramilitaries who are on a so-called ceasefire continuing to threaten your officers?
Well, ceasefire is an odd term, because when we look across the loyalist paramilitaries, they're fractured groups, but some of them are engaged obviously in very serious criminality, as I've said. And so ceasefire is not a term that really we recognise. We look to the actual harm, the offences and the criminality that they're engaged in, and we're there to prevent that, and where it happens to detect it.
I've got to say I'm shocked this morning. I genuinely am. About two officers a month still in this current era in Northern Ireland, where we think we have relative peace, having to move their home. And if we think what that means, you know, families being moved, children being moved, possibly being moved from school.
Yes, and huge upheaval. And also then, you know, that reverberates among their work colleagues and those that they know well within the organisation. But it has a big impact on the family as well, because in effect, they're uprooted from schools, from their friends and from close family.
And presumably it's hard to actually pinpoint who has made the threat. It's hard to bring those people to justice.
Very often we're acting on intelligence. And obviously if we can convert that into a criminal case, we will, and we do.
Sorry, I genuinely am surprised by that. It's thrown me slightly. What about resources and what you need to do the job in Northern Ireland? Have you got enough? Is that contributing to stress?
I've already touched it. That's very hard to judge. And, you know, outside of the laboratory, it's very difficult to say this is the cause and therefore this is the impact or the effect. What I would say is that we have concentrated as an organisation on sort of three big areas, and that's around, you know, terrorist groups, loyalists, violentists and Republicans, and also then growing threat from internationally based terrorism as well, but also then serious and organised crime and vulnerability. And I've already touched upon vulnerability because that's, you know, domestic abuse, child sexual exploitation, child abuse, images online. So we have the resources to protect society from those threats.
But you must know, you're one of the most senior police officers that we have. You must know in terms of your overtime, how stretched your force is, whether you've got adequate numbers now, or whether you're expecting officers within your team to be constantly doing overtime, which would lead to stress. What's it like? What's the core like?
If I had to describe the core, I'd say the core is running very hot. Our officers give a full measure when they're in the workplace. All of them are working very hard, and, you know, constantly officers are going the extra mile in terms of their dedication to their duty, and our police staff as well.
Yeah, but so, are they stretched into constantly needing to do overtime? Are they stretched that way?
Well, overtime is regulated, and overtime also is a consequence of the amount of money that we get as well. And overtime has fallen. And so, you know, over that 5-year period from 2012 to now, overtime would have reduced. But at the same time, when people are in the workplace, they are very busy. There are big demands made of police officers out in patrol.
Have you got enough officers, or do you need more to try to contribute to making it a less stressful place for your base?
Well, I think our purpose is obviously to protect Northern Ireland. You know, we're very clear about keeping people safe. And I've set out how we're trying to do that in terms of concentrating on those areas. And I think, you know, we're showing success in respect of that. But that is that there is a lot of pressure on our staff. I won't deny that. But there's also a lot of pressure on our staff because I don't think that perhaps we're meeting all the expectations that the public might have on us. And so there's an element of our visibility, which is now becoming different because we have to police the cyberspace, but we're also policing crimes which happen in a very private space. So, you know, serious sexual assault, domestic abuse, child abuse are all very private space type crimes, as is crimes on the internet. And police aren't visible when they're doing that. And we're having to put more resources into specialist detective roles and specialist policing roles.
What type
and
of that's crimes not on visible. The internet?
Well, I think people will be very well aware of the Scamwise program that we launched last year. And so there's a lot of scams committed over the internet via email and trying to defraud people out of money. But another big area of concentration for us is around the abuse of children online. And we work with our partners in the National Crime Agency, but also then with Garda Síochána and other forces in England and Wales to share investigations, share information, share intelligence, and identify those who are abusing children online.
And is that increasing in terms of the amount of people? Do you mean indecent images of children online, or when you say abusing children online, Is that people trying to target and groom children, or both?
Well, we don't make the distinction. All of these, you know, what would have been indecent images is actually a continuing child abuse of a child. But there's the sharing of those images and the sharing of those images, which then creates a demand, and children are further abused. So we really put a lot of effort into clamping down in the movement of those and identifying individuals who share those images. And I have to say, whether it's growing or not, it's hard to say, but it does, it would give the appearance that it is growing, but our detection techniques are improving. There's a lot of work being done with the National Crime Agency, but also into big law enforcement agencies like the FBI around detecting the movement of such images over the internet and identifying those who are sharing images. So our means of detection is improving as well. But the internet and the dark net below that is a huge area, you know, just an infinite area to try and police. And we have to put a lot of resources into trying to detect offenders here in Northern Ireland, but also detect where children have been abused here in Northern Ireland, or even coerced over online to the point of abuse.
Can you give me a sense of scale in that? Because again, I would have thought one or two people a year might try to share indecent images of children, because, my goodness, you just can't fathom it. Is it? Can you give me a sense of scale?
At any one time, in the order of 200 investigations open into actual suspects, so not just, you know, information, but here's a suspect, and moving forward that to gather evidence then.
Is that on the increase?
Yes, as I've said, as we put more resources to it, we're detecting more as well. So,
what does that say, Drew?
Well, it's an indication of just
at any one moment in time, 200. There would be 200 suspects.
Yes,
of people abusing children online from Northern Ireland.
Yes, yes. Well, what that tells you is that the internet, the great value of this that has to society, has also been used for very dark and evil purposes, and it is a difficult area to police, and the policing of that is by and large invisible to the rest of society, and that's the point that I was making in respect of how demands have changed upon the police over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. And when I joined the police, you know, such offending was entirely unknown and unthought of, and probably beyond our imagination.
Do we prosecute and charge and convict many people if it's 200 people at any one time as suspects?
There's a constant flow of people through the courts in respect of this. Constantly, every week, there'd be operations in respect of, you know, searching, retrieving of material, and reporting to the PPS, charging to the PPS.
So what's going on in our society?
Well, we're policing the harm as we see it's going on in our society. But sometimes I do wonder as well what is actually going on, because when you look around and you see the number of people who are in dire straits, you know, through alcohol or drug dependency, and it's not just illicit drugs. And, you know, we increasingly are coming into contact with those sorts of cases. The amount of violence there is within relationships, the amount of abuse there is of children, it is at times quite startling. But, you know, police have a certain worldview, and sometimes serious harm is pretty much at the fringes of our society, and that's where we have to put our effort to try and really remove people from the terrible situation to find themselves in, be it an abusive partner or being in a position where they themselves are being abused as a child, be it through child sexual exploitation of a vulnerable child going missing, or child abuse in some sort of familial relationship.
Vulnerable children going missing, does that happen often?
Well, A lot of our work is in respect of missing persons, is around children who go missing and are very often missing. You know, we'll have episodes of going missing every week, and are then either... fractured families, or they're in the care system, they're in children's homes, and we put a lot of work and effort and work hard with our partners in the social services and health boards in respect of that, to try and reduce the harm that they are at risk of, and the harm that does happen to them as well, because they are easily abused, and we've seen they're in a position where they can be easily abused. They're without the checks and balances of a supportive peer group and a supportive family group that can, you know, keep them away from danger.
I keep on asking for numbers, and it's completely fine if you don't have them. It's not that type of interview this morning. Are there many children go missing every week in Northern Ireland?
Yes, there is. Yes, we would deal with about 12,000 missing person reports every year, and the proportion of that, and I'm taking this off the top of my head, is in and around, I think, about 60%. So 17 and under go missing, but a lot of that is concentrated in children who go missing from care homes or from very difficult family situations.
So that's a whole world in itself.
It's a whole world in itself. There's a whole...
I'm here to talk to you about the stress of your officers today, but I'm getting an insight into the world of a police officer.
But this relates to it, because, you know, police officers find themselves very often dealing with, as I've said, people in dire straits, people in entirely hopeless situations, and can feel powerless about what they can actively do to resolve the situation. And that is very stressful in itself. It's very difficult to think that you really have not achieved a public good in terms of how you've dealt with an individual or an incident, that you know the same thing is going to reoccur and reoccur. And there's a whole sort of aspect of policing, and I think it does tie into stress, probably more than issues such as a threat. It's just there's a group of people in society who lead a very, very chaotic lifestyle and dangerous lifestyle, and are vulnerable to all sorts of criminality.